The Guardian.
Hi there, Football Weekly people. Can you keep a secret? Until the 9th of December, our friends at The Guardian Bookshop are running a very special offer just for you. They've got copies of I Am the Secret Footballer for just £6.50. That's 50% off the normal price and cheaper than anywhere else on the net. Hurry on over to guardianbookshop.co.uk/secretfootballer and use the offer code FOOTBALL. But remember, it's our little secret.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Today, Premier League. Chelsea take on this week's big-name visitor at the Bridge, but it ends all square with Benitez. Man City also present. Pod asks, though, is he fact before he even begins? Elsewhere, red nap crisis at QPR as man who has trouble with the three R's now tries to deal with 11 of them. We look forward a bit to QPR Sunderland and all the midweek action. Plus, there's a special European roundup. Spain, Real beaten by Betis. Is the title race now over? Italy, Juve beaten by Milan as Berlusconi enjoys an evening with old lady for a change. And France, Ibra back, and so is Joey Barton. How did OM fare, and how long did he take to get a yellow card? All will be revealed in today's Football Weekly. Welcome on board, everybody. Here with us, Barney Ronne. That was right, wasn't it, Barney?
Yeah, that sounds all right. Yeah.
Good. Philippe Auclair.
Hello.
What was the answer, Philippe?
22 minutes.
22 minutes, Joey Barton. And Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
Hi, Barry. How are you?
Fine.
Great. What an incredible weekend. What an incredible weekend. So many stories to talk about, amongst which a special package which arrived for you, Barney Ronne, today, the Sexy Managers Calendar 2013. Can you talk us through this one?
It's just a whole massive world of wrong. It's like if you sat Nathan Barley down and asked him to do something about football, he'd probably come up with that. It's actually really disturbing. There's one where you can almost see Arsene Wenger's vagina. Yeah.
That's actually the opening. That's January 2013. I flipped this calendar open and I found an exquisitely illustrated picture of Arsene Wenger as a French maid. That's extraordinary. And it gets worse. It's Andre Villas-Boas buff on a horse. Sven emerging from the surf.
Well, that just looks like a picture of Sven.
How about this one of Fabio Capello, naked on the bed, covered only by rubles? It's extraordinary. And where's... there we go. Kenny and Sir Alex reenacting that scene. From Ghost, Sir Alex, of course, taking the Swayze role. Super! Rafa Benitez is in the calendar, as is Harry. Harry's kind of naked riding on a red pepper, I
That's
think.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, and Rafa Benitez, in one of the more sober illustrations, is doing a flamenco.
Yeah, he's dressed as a flamenco. He's doing a sexy flamenco. I mean, you know, I don't support this calendar in any way. It's deeply disturbing. It just happens to have arrived this morning.
Okay, that brings us on quite nicely, I think, to Rafa Benitez.
Yeah.
Who's begun his reign at Stamford Bridge. Philippe. Mm. You were there for the historic moment.
Yes.
Have you
historic
ever
historic moment? Okay.
Have you ever seen a reception like it for a new manager?
No. And I was trying to think, manager or player, actually. I can't remember anything like that. Even you would have thought, for example, an obvious comparison would be with George Graham taking over at Spurs. But in fact, George Graham, when he took over at Spurs, I think it was more an icy silence that greeted him. I'd never seen anything like that. Yet there were sort of mini demonstrations in the street around Fulham Broadway before the game with people carrying banners and singing, "We want our Chelsea back." And
do they want their Chelsea back, do you think?
Well, the question is, which Chelsea?
Well, if Abramovich was to save them tomorrow, oh, there you go, have it back.
Well, this is what we're talking. I mean, Philip, was anybody saying Roman out?
No.
Nobody.
No, nobody was saying Roman out. But it was astounding because I was expecting, I think, like most people, that there would be a little bit of a bustle in the stands and a few shouts here and there. But the fact it was the whole ground actually joined in, and the announcer couldn't get his speech through, which was a little bit, I must say, tasteless because. He also was especially trying to convey the news of the passing of Dave Sexton.
Mm.
And he really struggled to get that through. And that was not good.
It's ironic that at a ground which Benitez had berated for only having plastic club-issued red plastic flags, so many fans had gone to the trouble of printing up pieces of A4.
Yeah, that's obviously going to have a huge effect on Roman Abramovich when he sees somebody with Rafa out scrawled in crayon on a piece of A4 paper. He'll probably think, oh, I've made a huge mistake, I must get rid of him and get someone else in. But I think if Chelsea fans want to protest, they should stay away from the ground. They will argue, oh, but we've paid our money and it's too expensive to not go. But football fans seem to be all about making the big statement, but without any financial or personal sacrifice.
I just think it's a real shame also because Benitez is a good man and a good manager, and looking at it objectively is one of the classiest things about the club at the moment. The only problem I've got with this appointment is that it's temporary. I think Di Matteo was always, in a way, an interim manager. He was an assistant who got promoted. Making Rafa Benitez your manager is generally always a pretty good idea.
It was very odd when you got the team sheet and you had the teams and you had the name of the managers, and you had manager Roberto Mancini, interim first team manager.
Even on the team sheet?
Yeah, on the team sheet, yeah. And on the programme.
That's welcoming.
And that's a bit odd. But no, it was a very strange atmosphere. And honestly, talking as well to French journalists, I asked them if they did any come across anything like that, and the answer is no. And, you know, you could compare, for example, perhaps it's the fact that also in England it's very rare for managers from big clubs to move to other big clubs, whereas, for example, in Italy, you would have countless examples, you know, Lippi, Ancelotti, I'm sure you could...
Zeman,
exactly, moving from one big club to the other and getting a bit of stick, but that's about it. This was different. And then there was the 16th minute as well, which is different, I suppose, if you're celebrating one of your very fine players as Roberto Di Matteo and you want to say goodbye to him in fitting fashion. That's completely different. But the boos were... That was astounding.
All right. Well, definitely. We'll come on to the game in a second. I just want to have a quick mention for Kelly Cates' stat, which he tweeted yesterday and ended up trending. So good a stat was it. Here's that stat in full, then. In 10 years, 7 managers have won the Champions League. One is Fergie, one is Rijkaard, one is Pep Guardiola. Of the other 4, Chelsea have sacked 3 and don't want the other one. Astonishing, no?
Yes.
Anyway, on to the game, then. One day in charge, pretty much, for Benitez. One or two changes, Ivanovic coming into the middle.
Yeah, not surprising. I mean, officially because Gary Cahill was suffering from fever or something. But I must say, before the game, I thought that would be one of the decisions that Benitez would take. He rates Azpilicueta quite highly. Actually mentioned his name a couple of times in his press conference, his presentation to the press on Thursday evening. And... it paid dividends. I mean, in terms of, you know, Chelsea hadn't had a clean sheet in 10 games, is that? And they looked more solid. Mm. And it was also fairly obvious that he'd given instructions to Juan Mata in particular to move back in a more withdrawn position. And every time one of his defenders was going forward, like David Luiz, immediately Ramirez or Mika would come to make sure that there was no hole in the defence. So you could say... The most important thing for Chelsea right now was to shore up the defence. He's done so, but at a price, obviously. There were two shots on target. Two shots on target is not great. Right, it was an awful match, if you look at it from the purely football point of view, as Barry would probably concur.
I would concur. Well, the actual game of football was probably the least interesting thing about what went on in Stamford Bridge yesterday.
Would you say that a point is good for Chelsea at this point?
Yes.
Right.
I mean, I'm completely neutral about that. Right. Don't quite share Mancini's assessment that his team deserved to take all 3 points. They didn't show much themselves, and his team selection as well was very conservative.
Very harsh yellow card for Balotelli, I felt, after he'd been clotheslined.
It's ridiculous, yes. Yeah.
Okay, well, next up for the Rafa Benitez Chelsea, they play Fulham. Ooh, imagine if they go behind in that game, eh?
Well, yeah. I mean, maybe they would, but I think, as Philippe points out, I mean, Benitez is probably a good... He's tactically very astute. I noticed both the central midfielders were sitting a lot deeper. It seemed more solid. I mean, I really don't understand what the problem is, to be honest. He's a good man to take them forward. Just don't call him interim manager.
Yeah, well, there you go. As I say, they're taking on Fulham. These games have been pretty tight over the last few seasons. 1-1 draws, and Barry's got an A4... sheet of paper saying Rone out.
Well, how many men does it take to make a sign like that? How many to hold it up?
Yeah.
That's the question Benitez asked in his press conference. Yeah.
Well, there's a picture of one on the front page of Guardian Sport today, and the guys who made it, it's white writing on a blue sheet, but they've done that classic thing when you're making a banner that you run out of space at the end because the writing's too big. But they've done it like over 4 lines. They've done it twice. And so the last word is clown, but you can barely make out the end because they've had to do a really tiny to try and squeeze it in.
Lazy banner making, I expect better.
That's
but if you're a middle-aged man going to the trouble of doing that, you'd think you would do a better job.
Yeah. Arts and crafts, basic training at Stamford Bridge. That's what's lacking. Okay, well, as I say, it's Fulham coming up next. Fulham, who are second highest scorers in the Premier League right now. So that'll test out the new solid Rafa defence, of course. City, in the meantime, losing the lead in the Premier League to United at the weekend. United were taking on another of the managerially challenged sides. Of course, QPR, Harry Redknapp joining them. Do you know, this is the furthest north he's ever managed.
Is it really?
Apparently so. Credit to producer Ben for that one. He left Spurs in the top four. He left Pompey in the courts, basically. Which scenario do you see fitting his current job?
Well, I think they'll gradually climb the table a bit and he'll probably be fine. He's probably the perfect man for that club and those players right now because there is no logical sort of structure in place.
But this is a club where the high turnover of players was blamed for their total lack of team spirit. Is Redknapp then the right manager to bring
in? Yeah, he's going to kind of ride the wave. You know,
won't he just buy loads more players to be confused and ill-sorted?
Yeah, but why not? In crazy times, maybe you need a slightly crazy... I mean, you know, this is what he's good at. This is what you would hire him for. I think that'd probably be all right.
You think so, Barney?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was quite funny to see pictures of Harry Redknapp conducting his first training session because it's probably the first training session he's conducted in about 20 years.
But just to be clear, they've got good players, you know. Right.
On the way, I'm guessing.
Yeah, they will buy more players and they've already got lots of objectively good players. They are in a slightly false position if you just look at the talent they've got.
Right.
There's one question I'd like to ask, though, about that. But maybe I'm jumping the gun, is the fact that was Redknapp in charge of team selection and team changes at Old Trafford already? Is that the case? You think so?
You'd imagine he'd probably given indications, no?
Well, the reason why I asked that is because when QPR were 1-0 up, it did that typical thing of, don't show me that, please.
I was just looking for the Harry Redknapp
illustration.
And I come to one of Roberto Mancini. I don't know why I'm laughing. Standing in the moonlight, holding a pair of French windows wide open, his arms flung wide, and only a scarf, a Man City scarf, covering his manhood. Extraordinary. Ah, there's the Harry Redknapp one. There you go.
Don't show me things like that.
All right, then.
And... No, I was just going to say, because it's a question, I honestly ask the question, because if it is indeed him who did it, stop it, Jimbo. UPR were 1-0 up, and he did this typical thing that managers do when they want to protect a lead. You bring on another defender, and so, if I'm not mistaken, Anton Ferdinand went in, and they conceded from two corner kicks, almost immediately.
Well, so they send on an extra defender? Well,
yeah. No. Yeah. Well, they were playing the world's greatest comeback team, no? Man United. I mean, it wasn't enormously surprising to see the Red Devils roar back into that fixture.
Sixth time this season, coming back after...
I think more than that, actually.
No, coming back and winning, because there were other games that...
And previously, Redknapp can now talk about, you know, the size of the task, how few points they had. I saw that first game, what I had to put, you know... Mm.
Well, a cynic might argue that if QPR had won, he'd have taken the credit for it. But now that they lost, he can absolve himself of all responsibility.
And I'm so glad we don't have a cynic here to spoil things.
But the thing is, I don't think anyone gave QPR a hope in hell of winning that game. So the fact that I didn't see it, but I believe they played
competed.
Well.
They competed, absolutely. They
and,
well.
You know, that's at least their they fans. Showed the Michael Hands of this world can at least take some heart from that.
Absolutely, yeah. It was a game played with a different spirit by Rangers, who now face an easier run of fixtures. They've got Aston Villa coming up at home at the weekend. But before that, on Tuesday night, in a real battle of the bottom Tuesday night, the bottom four all taking each other on. This coming Tuesday, they are away to Sunderland, Barry, who lost 4-2 against the incredible West Brom this weekend. Have now had two wins in the last 20 Premier League games.
Yeah, Sunderland played quite well in that game. It was one of their better performances, even though they lost 4-2. Lee Cattermole had to go off injured, and you could see them sort of visibly wilt after that. And he's out for a while now, as is John O'Shea, so there'll be two big losses. It is desperate times for both clubs. You asked me a few weeks ago if I was worried. I said no. Now I am, I think. But
2 points from the drop, is that right?
Yeah. They've 12 points ahead of Southampton, who have 11, and Villa, who have 10.
But Newcastle are riding to their rescue as well.
Yeah, I would say the chances, you know, Villa and Southampton both are showing signs of life.
Villa this weekend. Well, I think Villa will be...
We'll come on to your Birmingham expedition. No, that's fine, Barney. But there's a little taster there, listeners, of what Barney's got in store for you when he recounts his trip to Villa Park this weekend. That's later on, though. You'll have to wait for that. Because right now, a musical interlude and then Europa. Well, that is provocative, isn't it? I should just point out...
disturbing.
Yeah, it's I should just point out these are not actual photographs. What they are drawings of naked bodies with very, very lifelike little depictions of the appropriate manager's head.
The disturbing
this
because
Brokeback
they are...
Mountain one. How about this with Roy Hodgson and the mistletoe under the Christmas tree? Thank goodness there was
really
a candle.
Back, do they? They're overtly erotic in content. And,
that's what's so disturbing. It's how good they are, Barney. Yeah. Anyway, I don't know if you have anything like that in Paris.
No.
In Paris Saint-Germain, Carlo Ancelotti, no?
No.
With the Eiffel Tower just covering his...
No.
No?
No, I've never seen that.
All right.
And I don't want to see those pictures ever again.
I'll remove them from your prudish French eyesight. Yep. Okay, Paris Saint-Germain won again. Zlatan back, scoring two, setting up another two. All fantastic. And yet, Philippe,
yes,
the fans were booing there as well. Why?
Well, they're booing there because they're not happy with what's happening with the club.
When
Zlatan is not around, and it looks terrible. It looks absolutely terrible. So it's Zlatan to the rescue. We called a fantastic record of 12 goals in 14 games in the league, a record that previously belonged to Stéphane Guivarch, which amused quite a few people.
He scored 7 in his last 3 in all competitions.
No, he's been absolutely absolutely remarkable. But he is France Football did their front page on Ibra with a little pun that I will try to translate: Libra qui cache la forêt. Ibra, like arbre, the tree that hides the forest. Oh, you can't see.
Oh, yeah,
exactly.
Right.
Okay. And because the way they play is remarkably poor.
Right.
And you're wondering, actually, how long it's going to take Carlo Ancelotti to finally find a style and a balance in that team. It's been there for a while, you know.
Yeah.
It's not a case of being there for 90 minutes like Rafa Benitez. As the fact is, he arrived last winter.
Mm.
And we don't see signs of major improvement. Yeah, top of the table, but equaling points with Marseille, who have got one game in hand.
That is true. That is true. And it is so very tight at the top of Ligue 1. In fact, all the teams down to 9th,
as usual,
are within 6 points of each other. Katsuo Bushi, asking, are the French general public media behind the PSG project? Katsuo Bushi responding, if the PSG project was selling fluffy kittens to orphans, well, giving them perhaps, and eradicating world hunger, the French public would still hate it. Is that a fair...
Yeah, it's not very far from...
Yeah, people don't like PSG.
No, not at all. Oh. Apart from PSG fans, some of them. Not all the PSG fans. I mean, so-called historic fans don't recognise themselves in a new club.
Right.
It is a new club, to all intents and purposes.
When was it? 1974 or something like that?
71.
Okay. Now, one of the things that's been curious about PSG's rampant player purchasing power is the fact that they don't seem to be at all concerned about financial fair play. That's one question I suspect might involve a long answer, but... Just let me throw in another before you start. Will the new millionaire's tax that François Hollande's socialist government has just passed, the 75% tax, will that have a major impact on them? Will they find creative ways of signing players up?
Impact on PSG will be zilch and nil.
Why?
Because PSG have got bottomless pockets and they'll just reach a little bit deeper and they'll pay for the difference, exactly the way that Manchester City, for example, had a clause in Yaya Touré's contract, which made his wages go up when the tax rate was increased in this country.
Wow.
So it will be exactly the same thing. I'm sure that all this has already been put in a little packet, we'll tighten a little ribbon around it, and all is in place. For the other clubs, it's a bit of a disaster.
Okay, this is a tax that's specifically aimed at footballers, is that right?
Well, it's a tax that's aimed at people who earn more than 1 million euros per year.
Mm.
And according to press reports and to what the government is saying, it's only 1,500 people in France.
1,500 people?
Yeah, which I find hard to believe. And obviously, of these 1,500 people, quite a large number of those must be footballers.
Yeah.
Because the wages in Ligue 1 are by no means small. You know, you've got players who earn more than 1 million euros a year. There's quite a few of them. But yes, the clubs will try to find ways around it. But the major problem is that when you add to the extra fiscal weight that the clubs will have to bear, their capacity to attract players from outside and to hold on to their players is going to be, I mean, diminished to an extent that people are talking, are saying it's basically a murder of French football as we know it.
Right. Everyone's going to go to Belgium.
French football,
right?
Finances are an absolute disaster.
Oh, dear.
And FFP won't change a thing.
I just thought, considering how expensive everything is in Paris, that if you're paying 75% on a million euro income, what's left would, you'd be potless.
You would.
Within 6 months.
Yeah, don't go there, Ashley. Oh, have I let that one out of the bag? Ashley Cole. Of course, PSG have retracted this, and his mother hasn't specified which Eurostar station she was talking about.
There are many people who think it was a Photoshop business, by the way. Yes.
Oh, really? That it wasn't a genuine PSG?
It was on Twitter. So, okay.
All right.
And it was a screenshot. So it's very easy to Photoshop a screenshot.
All right.
But in any case, it's not really it's not exactly a secret that Carlo Ancelotti does rate Ashley Cole very highly. It's not exactly a secret that Chelsea and Ashley Cole haven't been on the best of terms for a while. And it's not a secret that Ashley Cole would probably leave at the end of the season.
Am I right in saying he's free to go at the end of this season?
He's free to go at the end of this season, and also he's free to enter negotiations with a foreign club from January onwards.
It's extraordinary they haven't tried to... I mean, you sign him up.
The word on the grapevine is that Chelsea have tried to part company with Ashley Cole for at least a couple of seasons.
Mm. Can I just ask, word on the grapevine, is a grapevine not tautologous? Is a vine not necessarily a grape?
It could be the word on the grape.
It could be a word on the vine, surely, because grapevine, it's like saying...
Are there no vines that don't have grapes?
Do you have tomato vines?
Tarzan swung from vines. And
vines are actually
there.
General...
Yes,
right.
They are.
All right.
Toss it swinging from the grapevine. It's a terrible idea.
It's the kind of idea you should send to the guy that did that calendar.
Yeah.
And then hide it again.
Because he's a talented man. Hmm. Now, in other exciting news, one top English player who has arrived in Ligue 1.
Finally.
Finally, because it was a week late because they forgot to put his papers in or something. Joey Barton, now on field in the league for OM.
Yes, for OM, played in midfield in that victory, 1-0 against Lille, which, by the way, is really what is preoccupying everybody in France, it seems, this morning, looking at L'Equipe here, and because there were loads of... there was some trouble, shall we say, during the game. Well, due to the fact that the refereeing was abysmal, there's no other word for it, Monsieur Duhamel, who was in charge of the game, probably could... and perhaps should have sent Joey Barton off.
All right. Why?
Well, let's put it that way. You call that a mistimed tackle, but the studs basically landed bang on Florent Balmont on his ankle. Right. They've been very, very dangerous. And he got a yellow card for that. And to make matters worse, poor Balmont was sent off for supposedly denying a clear goal-scoring opportunity when all he did was... yes, a foul, Mathieu Valbuena, who rolled for about 50 yards. He was not in a position to score, but he got the red card, and there was a little bit of a scuffle after that.
All right, apart from the yellow card...
But Joey Barton kept out of the scuffle.
Okay, and how did he play the rest of the game?
Fine. I mean, he had a decent game, as had most of the OM team, but nothing particularly spectacular. Could have scored, perhaps. It was a very good shot from 25 yards out. And also a couple of good crosses, including the one that led to the sending off, to the chance that Marseille created.
Philippe, I was just wondering what people actually think of Joey Barton in France. Because, I mean, in England, we have a very... he's considered a sort of intellectual because he cuts and pastes.
I shouldn't say it, but I may be a little too intelligent to be a footballer, as he told a French newspaper this weekend.
But France has a very different sort of view of people being... I mean, we know we're quite roundhead in this country. I mean, do people are people wowed by his incredible...
I don't think everybody necessarily buys into the Barton myth in France. What is true is that he's pushed all the right buttons in Marseille as far as the fans are concerned, and they have responded by taking him as one of their own. Outside of Marseille, I think, no, the image he has, all his troubles have been widely reported. And in fact, there's the one thing he succeeded, apart from the fact of playing his first game for OM finally, is that probably, if you look at the column inches, I would say apart from Ibrahimovic, I can't think of a player that's been written about and talked about more than Joey Barton this season, and he's only played his first game this weekend.
Wow, I'm looking forward to those two coming face to face. Which paper did he give the interview to this weekend where he said he was too intelligent, and did he give it in French?
La Provence. No, not in French. I think it's La Provence.
Maybe he only said, je suis content d'être ici, or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. You know, he will mutter a few words like Joe Cole did when he was at Lille.
Je suis un intellectuel.
Oui. Have some of that.
Je suis Joey.
Now.
Doesn't sound quite I am Zlatan, does it?
No. Moving on. Still up there in third and just a point behind the big two of St. Etienne.
Yeah, that's the incredible, isn't it?
Aubameyang.
Yeah. Well, I think...
That's a great name. Yes. Did I say it right?
Yes, more or less. And one of those players that you don't think is going to hang around in Ligue 1 for too long.
Right, but I'm sure he'll come back again, though, if he goes. Because he's called Aubameyang. Oh, dear. Okay. Jan, what kind of player is he, believe?
Oh, God. He's terrific. He's a great finisher, very, very quick, very skillful.
Okay.
He's not exactly a discovery. I mean, with his national team, he's been terrific.
Jan Umbila is banned from his national team.
Yep.
Yeah, he's challenging that in courts, the two-year ban.
Well, yeah. He's appealing.
Right.
He's appealing. Another of the... it's funny the attitude that the various clubs have got towards the players who've got into that little... ride on the motorway a few days before the France-Norway games, because you know that's the reason for this ban.
They drove all the way to Paris from...
To go to a club.
It was like 200 kilometres or something.
Yeah, like that. Then they clubbed, and then they took the taxi back, and that was just a couple of days or three days before the under-21s lost 5-3 to Norway.
Right.
So it's not really good. But some of the other players, on the other hand, haven't been treated as harshly as he has, so I guess he's got... a point to prove here.
Yeah. All right, then. Good. Hey, in Italy, Sunday night, big game there. Milan taking on Juventus. Juve, who hadn't lost in 49 games in Serie A, have now lost 2 in 4. Extraordinary. They were unrecognisable, Barry, before you ask. I think the Chelsea match, the intensity of that Champions League game, that took something out of them because they really didn't look like the same team, as indeed unrecognisable suggests.
Were they wearing David Platt masks?
No. They weren't. Milan didn't actually, I don't think, force a save out of Gigi Buffon all game, but they still won 1-0. How? First of all, they were given a penalty for handball, which wasn't actually a handball, and the ref behind the goal didn't see it.
So unfair on Juve. I mean, they should launch a complaint.
It's not the first time this has happened either, poor old Juve. And as two, the other big motive in this is the fact that Berlusconi, once again, flew into Milanello, the training ground, on his helicopter in the build-up to the match and motivated the team by telling Pato that he should be used in very, very small doses and telling Allegri that we've told everyone we're actually trying to bring Guardiola in, so just so you know. And that's working out brilliantly. But
good to see he's enjoying his time in prison, serving that sentence he got.
Well, no, he's so talking about a return to politics, actually, with all the immunities that would bring. He's also talking about relaunching Milan. We are building the Milan of the future to start a new cycle. We're going to get the best young players, 22, 23 years old, and then every hour we could buy... He's got two M's in Potremmo, so we might be able to buy the best player. Two or three years, he reckons they're going to be back at the top, says Berlusconi. All very interesting. Juve, who, let's not forget, are still without Antonio Conte, and the guy who was filling in from on the bench... made rubbish changes, frankly. They were 1-0 down. He took off Quagliarella and he put on little Giovinco. Quagliarella was so upset, you could see he was going to say something. And he knew that everyone was waiting for him to say something. So what he did was he kind of put his coat on over his mouth, and as he walked back, he said into the collar, "Razum, scrazum, scrazum," as he walked past the manager. It was a lovely, lovely moment. Anyway, and then Quagliarella's not on the field when a lovely cross comes in, and Giovinco, all 3 foot of him, tries the overhead kick, and it all goes horribly wrong, and that really summed the evening up for Juve.
Well, you say that's a bad change, but...
I think so.
Did they not make a similar change against Chelsea, and it worked out quite well?
No, it didn't. Did it?
Well, Giovinco scored.
Did he? Did he score against Chelsea? Oh, yeah, he did at the end. Yeah, he ran it. Yeah, but Chelsea ran there. I take your point, Barry, it is a fair one.
And I would have to say, even though he did score against Chelsea, I wasn't very impressed with Quagliarella.
Were you not?
I don't see him play very well. He seems to miss a lot.
He scores a lot of goals at the moment.
Okay.
But I just don't think Giovinco's big enough. And I know that's a bit reductive, but I just think he's
especially coming from you.
Well, I'm not trying to, you know, play up against professional footballers.
Was Chiellini injured?
Chiellini was injured, yeah.
That's bad, isn't it, for
them? It's extremely bad, yeah, because he's the best defender in the world.
Not far from it.
I think he is. But then what do I know? Juve could find their lead whittled down to 1 point if Inter win later today at Parma. It's not a gimme. Parma are unbeaten at home this season.
Is it true Inter are not playing Schneider until he agrees to take a pay cut?
They've taken it. They've said, go home with our offer, and while you're thinking about it, you're not playing. They've effectively said that.
So you could then just not ever play and still pick up your...
Yep.
I suppose.
Plenty of players have done that before, but his offer is to take his current fat short-term contract and turn it into a slightly longer but much fatter contract. So year on year, he'd be earning less, but it would be a longer deal.
But why did they offer him that contract in the first place?
Well, maybe they had more money at the time. Anyway, they're winning without him, and so the manager says it's his decision, and Schneider, while he's thinking about it, to give him time, to give him the peace of mind he needs to consider his future, they're not going to bother him with any of that playing football stuff, which is very, very generous, I think. The other Italian news I should mention is that Zdenek Zeman went back to Pescara, the side that he brought up from Serie B last year, and he's given them a little bit of a helping hand on the road back down again with a 1-0 win for his new team, Roma. Extraordinary this, because it means that Roma won 1-0, Zdenek Zeman team winning 1-0, a clean sheet for Zdenek Zeman team.
Was he Benitezed by the Pescara fans?
No, he wasn't. No, they gave him a warm... Everyone loves Zeman, apart from one or two folk in Turin. But no, he was very warmly received. But he does seem to have undergone a bit of a road to Damascus moment, because he actually took off two forwards and put on two midfielders in this game.
Crikey.
Yeah. Anyway, that's enough Italian football for now. Turkish football, Barry. Turkish football, where Felipe Melo in Lazigspor against Galatasaray had to... Go on, Barney.
Well, I was just going to say I saw him play on Tuesday against Man United. I was in Istanbul.
Oh, there you go.
And he's an absolute hero there. The fans love him. He wears a number 10 shirt, even though he's a defensive midfielder, which is a kind of holy shirt in Istanbul. And he kicked lumps.
Why is it a holy shirt in Istanbul?
Because Hagi used to wear it, also Arda Turan, the well-known people carrier who was a very popular player there for a while.
Okay.
And he's known as the Pitbull.
The Pitbull.
And when he saved the penalty, which he saved...
So the goalkeeper gets sent off, is that right?
And yeah.
They've made all the substitutions, so Felipe Melo goes between the posts.
It was one of the strangest penalties. He seemed to be sort of in a strange kind of trance, rolling his eyes, and it was a really weird save. He almost sort of fell over and blocked the ball, and then immediately did his pit bull celebration, which was wandering around like a dog on all fours. It was a really strange interlude, an absolute legend. I mean, he's a club legend already.
All right, good. I'm glad he's found a home for himself, Felipe Melo.
He's still on loan from Juventus.
Is he?
Yeah. They want to buy him, but he's too expensive.
Right. Interesting. Very good. Let's now dial up Sid Lowe after what's been a pretty momentous weekend in Spain as well. Sid, how are you?
I'm all right, thanks, James. How are you?
I'm very well. Nice to hear you.
To hear you, nice.
Hey. So much to discuss. First of all, the title race is over.
Well... It's tempting to say that, isn't it?
Oh, go on, it is, Sid. How many points? 11?
Well, you know what I like? And I honestly don't think this was deliberate, but it could be deliberate. And if it is deliberate, it's the best kick in the teeth I think I've ever heard from a manager. Last night, Tito Villanova, the Barcelona coach, was asked, is the league title race over? And he said, no, it's not over. There are 75 points to play for, and Atletico are only 3 points behind us.
Well, there you go. There you go, because they had a huge win with Falcao getting four, is that right?
No, he didn't get all four. He got the first, which was a penalty.
All right. The other must have been a replay, I think. Yeah.
They won 4-0 against Sevilla. There was also... Oh, there goes the drill. There was also four... Can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
Oh, you can. It's just next door. It's just got this drill out, as you can probably hear.
Oh, nice.
Yes. Malaga beat Valencia 4-0 and Barcelona won 4-0. So, Falcao got one of the four. Atletico Madrid are now 8 points clear of Real Madrid. Atletico Madrid are. They play each other next week. But, of course, the thing that most people are focusing on, although I have to say, I think it's a little bit unfair. I've seen quite a lot of comments today saying, oh, the papers are ignoring Atletico Madrid as usual. No, they're not. Atletico Madrid are front covering both the main Madrid dailies, which are, of course, the ones that have a national readership. And because they're 8 points clear of Real Madrid. But, of course, underneath it all, I think we all suspect that what really matters is that Barcelona are 11 points clear of Real Madrid. Mm. 11 points is only three more than Madrid dropped in the whole of last season.
Wow.
And that's how much they trail by already. It's only nine more than Barcelona did in the whole of last season. Barcelona have equaled the best ever start to a season with, I think it's 12 wins and one draw. And Barcelona, 11 points clear, with 11 players from their youth system playing last night.
Remarkable. Sid, what went wrong for Real Madrid there in Seville?
To be honest with you, I think what went wrong was what's always potentially going to go wrong with Real Madrid. Now, Real Madrid have so many good players that largely, even when they don't play well, they normally find a way through. But what teams are discovering, and I must say I'm surprised it's taken this long to discover it, is that what everybody says you have to do against Barcelona, which is say, you know what, sod it, let them have the ball, let them play, just defend them, close them off and play on the break. Teams are starting to realise that you can do that against Real Madrid as well, because when teams close off against them, Real Madrid are, and I don't mean this to sound like a criticism, although it probably will sound like one, Real Madrid are quite a simple team. They're not intricate. They're not clever in the way they attack. They just have very, very good players. And they normally do find a way through, but where they've dropped points this season, apart from obviously the Barcelona game, which finished 2-2, where they've dropped points this season has tended to be where teams have looked at Real Madrid and thought, right, well, this is a team that plays on the break, so let's not give them the chance to play on the break. Let's sit deep and not allow them to have that space in front to go into. And Pepe Mel, I think, said it really well. He said, you know, this is a team that plays like this, so we're going to say, have the ball then.
Mm. Magnificent. Sid, I've got three other things I wanted to ask you about. One, Arbeloa having a go at a hater by quoting from Ratatouille. What's that?
I love it. I absolutely love it, yeah. Alvaro Arbeloa, who not so long ago quoted Malcolm X to try and have a go at journalists. And I think the quote from Malcolm X was something like, what was the actual phrase? If you're not careful, the media will make you love the oppressors and hate the oppressed. And he used that quote. This time he's gone for Mr. Ego from Ratatouille. Now, I can't claim to know anything about Ratatouille. Apparently, Mr. Ego is a restaurant reviewer who suddenly at the end decides to turn all humble and admit that reviews are useless. And the quote is, we're experts at everything, which means none of us is really, but we keep on criticising others. This is what Arbeloa suggests. And the quote is, in many ways, the work of a critic is easy. We risk very little, yet enjoy a position over those who offer their work up and themselves to our judgment. We thrive on negative criticism, which is fun to write and to read. But the bitter truth we critics must face is that in the grand scheme of things, the average piece of junk is probably more meaningful than our criticism designating it so.
Beautifully, beautifully read. Now, Sid, another thing I wanted to ask you about was the election. The election there in Catalonia. What are they doing next door now?
Yeah, I'm more interested in what the guy is doing next. Because it's drilling and now hammering.
Right, he's got his
is
own
he coming
separatist
to get
movement
you?
Coming on.
Well, what I'm worried is that any minute now, there'll be a... exactly, the wall will come down and there'll be a tunnel coming
through. He's making a torture dungeon. It's a bit like QI, isn't it? As soon as he disagrees with anything Sid's saying, suddenly it starts up.
That's what it is. It's some sort of strange game. It does worry me.
All right.
Any minute now, I'm going to see pictures fall off the wall and frames break and stuff.
Well, Sid, your video on Catalan independence has done very well on the site over the weekend. Everyone seems to be enjoying it, so congratulations on that.
Well, I think there's been one or two non-enjoyable... non-enjoyed people. Not the right word, is it? I've lost the ability to speak English. What do you say?
Hey,
people who haven't enjoyed it.
Takes all sorts, Sid, of course. Now, a lot of people asking if with this move towards devolution, etc., Barcelona and Espanyol, could they end up playing in Ligue 1, as the suggestion was floated this weekend?
No, I don't think so. One of the things that's not in that video, and one of the questions we asked virtually everyone involved, was that is there a contradiction in a push towards independence and a desire, which I think is, there's no doubt that Barcelona have a desire to continue playing in the Spanish League, and what would happen to the Spanish League. And Barcelona certainly believe that in the long run it will move towards some sort of European League anyway. But there isn't necessarily a contradiction in Catalan independence and a Spanish football league, because of course one's a private affair, one's a state affair, one's based on politics. That Barcelona would claim, and certainly their vice president claims, that they're not pushing through independence, they're just going hand in hand with what the Catalan people think. So therefore, if they want independence, they go with them. If they don't, they don't. And their argument is, well, Monaco, Swansea, teams from Andorra, you don't necessarily have to be from the same country. There's another factor in all this, which is that which is that no one in Spain's got any interest in Barcelona leaving the Spanish league. Can you imagine how bad the league would be if they went? Speaking of Espanyol, by the way, they've just sacked their manager. They're the first team this season to sack a coach.
Huzzah! Fantastic stuff. Look forward to catching up with you on Thursday, perhaps.
Yeah, okay. Speak to you then.
Many thanks for that, Sid, and your noisy neighbour. Now, as I mentioned, Tuesday's bottom of the table day, QPR Sunderland, and those that aren't drawn to that might find solace in Aston Villa Reading. Reading at the weekend lost to Wigan 3-2. Jordi Gomez hat-trick, and most importantly, that Ali Alhabsi goal. Own goal. No, poor chap. It's very difficult with the dropping the ball.
It's a shame. He's a really good goalkeeper, but, you know, these things happen.
These things happen. Well, Reading now are going to be away at Aston Villa, who are in the bottom three now. You saw them this weekend, Barney. They're too good to go down, aren't they?
Yeah. No, I mean, I don't know about that, but it's encouraging. I think Paul Lambert's a decent manager. There's some very young, inexperienced players, and they look very tactically sound.
Yeah.
They just don't have that many points yet. The odd thing going on there is that Darren Bent is apparently fit, but just not picked in the squad.
Mm.
And nobody really knows why, and he'll probably be off in January, I'd imagine, given that he's on enormous wages to be not playing.
Well, Villa were probably quite happy with their draw against Arsenal. The Arsenal fans, though, weren't.
Well, there was a small proportion of them sang in the 86th minute. Wenger took off Olivier Giroud, and because he was obviously tired, and people started chanting about wanting their Arsenal back and all that kind of thing.
Right.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I wonder which Arsenal they want back. Perhaps the Arsenal of the George Graham era, which was so famous for its all-out attacking football, or all the Arsenal that has twice relocated for financial reasons, or the Arsenal that keeps getting to the Champions League last 16. I mean, it's an odd debate. I had this debate with Amy last time she was in here. I mean, she knows more about the club than I do. I obviously look at it from a more emotional point of view, but I didn't really understand the unrest. And there were lots of people going on about Wenger on the train on the way back as well.
What were they saying?
That they want their Arsenal back.
All right.
I think the Arsenal they want back is the Arsenal that wins trophies every now and again.
Well, they stopped winning trophies when the Premier League became a billionaire's game. They have been unable to compete with that. Their best players have regularly been signed by people with more money.
Mm. I mean, that's they've got £150 million coming in over how many years for their shirt sponsorship?
I was thinking of the naming rights. I think the naming rights is until 2028 for the stadium.
No, but this is a new shirt deal.
The new shirt deal, and there's also the new deal with the kit sponsor.
Right.
So all in all, that means that a lot of money is going to come in the coffers. Right. And finally, the commercial operation of the club, which are way, way, way behind that of clubs of comparable size in Europe, are finally going to... something on a par with the club's stature and status in European football. But, you know, just to come back on we want our Arsenal back. That's what I heard as well at the AGM this season. I think people are very confused. I think what they want back is probably the old board, the way that the clubs used to function when Danny Fisman was around, when David Dean was around, and that their big problem is basically with Stan Kroenke and Alisher Usmanov, and that Wenger is there, placed between, you know, between the hammer and the anvil in French, and he's a perfect, you know, he's a perfect scapegoat. Doesn't matter what he does.
How do you say scapegoat in French?
A bouc émissaire.
Barney, it's correct for Ronnie. 10 points. For your bonus question, Barney, and speaking of confused people, Christian Benteke, who thought that Aston Villa was in London and would actually quite like to go for Arsenal, do you think they'll snap him up then, based on the weekend's performance?
Well, I don't know if they need him. I mean, Giroud is a good centre forward, but Benteke's a very good player. If he was English, we'd be very excited about him because he's very physical and powerful, and people bounce off him.
Okay,
like
good.
Lukaku, he comes from Stamford Bridge, he's bigger than a fridge. Lukaku.
Yeah. There you go.
Thing about Arsenal fans, wanting their Arsenal back, I suspect the Arsenal they want back is very like the Chelsea that Chelsea's fans are complaining about now. So you should. Chelsea won the Champions League 6 months ago, and their fans have never looked more unhappy.
It's a universal condition. It's the recherche de temps perdu.
Wanting anything back sounds good, doesn't it? We want our BBC back. We want our childhood back.
One back. Those are the good days.
I want our Football Weekly
back. When we had that calendar out and having fun. Not all this Arsenal talk again. Arsenal, Wenger. Let's talk about Aston Villa Reading. Are they going to get a win, Villa, against Reading?
I don't know, but they're certainly playing they're playing a bit better than they were. And Lambert seems very optimistic. You know, they're showing signs of coming together a bit.
That's a huge Tuesday, though, isn't it? QPR Sunderland, Aston Villa Reading. Wow, that could really shake things up at the bottom.
Can I give some love to Aston Villa?
Ah.
Very quickly, because I didn't make many friends on Twitter when the game concluded, and I said I have found it a fascinating spectacle, and people thought you're being ironic. And I thought, no, I'm not being ironic at all.
Oh.
I thought that Lambert did absolutely magnificent job, tactically speaking. I'm very, very impressed with the way that he's managed to instill in that team what people would call a work ethic, but it's not just running around like, you know, wild dogs on the pitch. It's actually very concentrated. And I would even make the comparison, I was talking to Barney about with that, and I know people are going to say it's crazy, with what, for example, Borussia Dortmund are doing, which is this new idea of the gegenpressing, which is that you overcrowd and overload a couple of players whom you've identified as being absolutely crucial, and they were hounding Arsenal in a way that was absolutely remarkable and admirable. So kudos to Lambert for preparing his team well.
It's the Dortmund way. It's the Dortmund DNA in him that's coming out now.
Well, he's somebody who is a product of German football. Well, Scottish, but especially German football. So and he also, all his bad years he did in Germany. And so instead of complaining again about Arsenal not being able to do this, not being able to do that, just give some credit to the people he played against for once.
Absolutely. They are going to be at Everton, Arsenal. This Wednesday.
Oof, yeah.
You say oof, what do you mean, Philippe?
Because that's a tough one to call, because you've got an Everton team that yet again started the game extremely well and yet again let 3 points slip away. And it's a fact that if you were taking scores at half-time since the beginning of the season, what would be Everton's position?
First.
Top of the league, yes.
And you know who'd be bottom?
Tell me.
Man United.
Are you joking?
I'm making that up. Well, but it could be true.
Villa would be fifth if that was true. They've also lost a lot of leads.
Tell you what, that'd be a great way. And we'd save so much time over the weekend, wouldn't we?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying. It's just something to look out for.
Maybe we could have two leagues.
Maybe.
You know, that they've got this funny idea of the Apertura and the Clausura.
Yeah.
We could have the first half league and the second half
league. All right. And then you get the season done by the halfway point.
Yeah, and you could have relegation to the first half or promotion to the second. I don't know.
I like that idea. Let's go with that. And I should mention, if you talk about the teams at the bottom, and I haven't mentioned Southampton, well, they're not there anymore. Saints, two straight wins. Fixtures got a little bit easier, and the results have started coming in, and they now play Norwich, who, of course, drew with Everton. Norwich are also on a bit of a run themselves. Saints, very attractive team right now.
Yeah, they'll be fine. They'll escape relegation like everyone else.
Really?
Yeah.
Everyone's going to escape relegation.
Hooray!
Everyone's too good.
They're all on good runs. They all look fine.
Gaston Ramirez.
Well, there was a lot of talk of Gaston Ramirez, but the player that really caught my eye was young Adam Lallana.
Ah, yes.
Very, very special talent.
Extraordinary. Now, just to finish off, the other big game, of course, coming up this week is Spurs taking on Liverpool.
Stoke Newcastle,
my mistake, sorry. And also... there's Spurs taking on Liverpool. Liverpool, who were held goalless at Swansea. Chico Flores doing a bit of a number on Suarez there. Spurs, meantime, ending a run of four straight defeats with a big London derby win over West Ham. Lots to talk about here. Andy Carroll scored a goal.
That's not what we should be talking about.
Gareth Bale scored an
insignificant goal.
You want to talk about the West Ham supporters' behaviour?
Should we give them any publicity?
If I was a West Ham fan, I don't know, Jacob Sambit, I'd feel really unhappy about that.
Yeah, Jacob was very fed up over it, quite embarrassed by the behaviour, I think. So making...
It's not just West Ham fans. I was on a train actually coming back from Villa last year, and there was an entire carriage of Arsenal fans chanting about camps and gas and all that kind of stuff. It gave me the creeps.
Yeah, well, you're right. Right. Mm. But that wasn't what you wanted to talk about, Philly, then. What was it, then?
I wanted to talk about Newcastle. I find it very, very interesting what's happening there.
Oh, I haven't got time for that. Go on. If we'd had time, what would you have said about them?
If we had time, I would have said that are we seeing the real Newcastle this season rather than what we saw last year?
Well, they're spiralling downwards towards the bottom three.
Trying to keep giving excuses about the fact that they're now dropping like a stone. Mm. And one thing that really, really irritates me is the fact that I've seen it in the press And I've seen that she put the question put in such a way to Alain Pardew that he would answer yes to that, saying that the Europa League is really a big problem for them because they don't quite have the squad. Have a look at the players he's played in the Europa League, okay? Right. Yeah. He's not played any of the big guys. Right. He's playing with a second string most of the time with a couple of players who might play three games in a week. That's right. True. But that, I'm really fed up. This right. really, really annoys me.
All right, Philippe. Well, I'm just going to make one point to you, if I may.
It really annoys me. Sorry.
If I could just make one point to you.
Go on.
When you've got so many players out injured or suspended.
That is true.
Yeah, but then when do you need your second stringers? When the first teamers get injured or suspended, no? So it does have an impact.
But the injuries, I can. That's absolutely fair point to make.
But when
absolutely
your first teamers are injured, you need your second stringers.
But he's talking about himself as well. He has to prepare for those games. That's 3 days out of his week travelling.
No, that's true.
And he is the manager, and he obviously just sets his team up last year for the Premier League. That's much easier. He's finding it too much if he says Europa League. You know, it's a strain on managers too.
Mm. Right, okay. It wasn't such a strain on Fulham when they reached the final. Well, there you go.
But he's admitting to a failing when he says that.
Correct, yes.
All right. So, you know what? At the end of the day, it's only a game.
That's true.
And I think it's important to remember that as we head into this exciting midweek set of fixtures. That's it. Anyway, for today's Football Weekly, I think we've left the game a slightly better place than where we found it. And many thanks for that to Barney Rone and your calendar of fun. Yeah. Now, where can people find a calendar like that, Barney?
In the bin near my desk downstairs.
The poor chap who sent this in to you. Really? What's it called? Where's it gone?
We'll keep
hold of it.
Slipped it into your bag, James.
For a competition. And just so you know. What?
Give that to somebody.
Oh, yes, you can.
Don't give it the oxygen of publicity.
Yeah, it's like West Ham fans.
It's called Sexy Manager's Calendar 2013, which raises the interesting prospect of there being back issues, a 2012 edition, perhaps. Go back far enough, you could get Avram Grant in one of those. Just saying. Anyway, Barney Rene, thanks very, very much. Philippe Auclair, lovely to see you again. Barry Glendinning, you too, and producer Ben, and you, the listener. We're back on Thursday. Do join us then.
Don't forget to get your half-price copy of I Am the Secret Footballer. Get yourself over to guardianbookshop.co.uk/secretfootballer and enter the offer code FOOTBALL. But remember, it's our little secret.